another Minivade Gang podcast, episode 103. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning. The surfboard is on top of the Woody.
That's right, and that's why Graham Thickens is next.
And I've got that surfboard with a Woody underneath it out in my garage about 20 steps from where I sit.
That's right. And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
From my brand new MacBook Pro.
Yes. Wow. Yes. We're jealous. So,
gentlemen, you know, it's a big deal when I actually am the one that brings up Apple first.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Now you want to talk about it all the time, right?
Yeah, but you're like, I mean, you lucked out.
Excruciatingly positive experience with my friends over at the Apple store. So
that's fantastic. Yeah.
So did your old one just up and die or what?
Well, they had a problem with a video chip. And the video chip has been giving them fits in some of the old MacBooks. And NVIDIA has been taking care of it. But this was the second one I'd been through. So they said, listen, let's get you taken care of with something different. So.
So not only did he get a new one, but it's an i5 chip, and he's got 4 gigs of RAM in the thing.
Well, I had 4 gigs of RAM in the other thing, too.
You did not.
Yes, I did. I upgraded it. Right, yeah, sure. Loaded it up, baby.
Okay. I've got 4 gigs of mine, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Come on.
I have 10 gigs.
Come on.
I have 10
gigs.
Come
on, everybody's doing it.
All right. Oh, and my review copy of the iPad 2 has 4 gigs of RAM in it, too.
Don't even go there.
You've got a review copy.
He doesn't have it. No,
just kidding.
He's teasing.
Because you know you're not that far from me. I could be over there in minutes.
That's right. Well, hey, let's talk about the big story in town, which is Dell.
In our view,
Dell is in talks with Compellent to buy them.
Mm-hmm. One of my predictions back on January 1.
That's right. That's
now,
right.
Don't be going there yet. That's a whole nother show, Graham.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah, yeah. We get to be impressed by your prognostication skills.
Well, and my prognostication hasn't come true yet because the deal isn't done. And it's a really strange deal, Steve. And guys, I don't know if you've read the stories yet, but Dell made an offer well under what the stock price had run up to.
Yeah.
So the way the journal positioned it was Dell makes offer at discount for Compellent. So analysts that had been saying Compellent might get a valuation of $1.1 to $1.2 billion, they were saying that, you know, a couple months ago when there was another big deal in the storage space. Now, all of a sudden, it's $876 million. It's like, what a letdown, you know?
Well, yeah, they offer $27.50 a share, and the night before, Compellent had closed at $33.65. So it's like, what?
Yeah, so all the people that bought it thinking, a deal's getting close, you know, whoops, you know, it's now quite a bit down. But the deal isn't over, and I'll tell you why. And this is, again, my conjecture. I know a lot of people at Compellent. I have no inside information. And they would never tell me anyway. They keep their mouths shut. But it was publicized in the Wall Street Journal a month or more ago that they had discussions with Frank Quattrone of Catalyst Partners, famous investment banker, who did the deal when 3PAR got acquired for $2.1 billion in the big fight between HP and Dell, and Dell lost. Well, they conferred with Quattrone, and if anybody can bring the value up, it's Quattrone.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely.
The question is, who else is he shopping it to? Who else would buy it? You know,
would someone like NetApp be interested, do you think?
No. And the others, EMC and IBM, they've already made other acquisitions. They are not likely to buy Compellent, you know, is the word. Now, one company whose name was brought up a few months ago is Hitachi Data Systems, HDS, which doesn't seem to be getting brought up anymore. But I heard, and I don't know the update on this, that they were spinning out their storage group in an IPO. And I'm not up to speed on that, but I thought, that's interesting.
Yeah, they would be the logical people if NetApp's not interested in it.
Well, yeah, this story is going to go on for a while, but I predict that, you know, something will happen before the end of the year. It appears obvious, but whether it'll turn into a bidding war or not, who knows? If not, it'll probably go to Dell. at whatever, but they're still in negotiations on the price.
Well, it sure makes a lot more sense than when Phil Soren and crew sold Xyotech to Seagate. That I didn't get, but you know, selling it to Dell because of their enterprise focus, makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, they sell their storage stuff mainly to smaller firms, and Compellent is strong in mid-sized firms.
Yeah,
and they need that. So, and you know, there are ex-Dell people at Compellent. I mean, this is something that, you know, I sniffed could be a possibility a long time ago. I mean, they're friendly, or they certainly know each other, and it would be a good marriage, I think. And it would make a lot of early employees at Compellent very, very wealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, good for them.
Good for them. Well, let's. This is a horrible segue, but the other thing we wanted to chat briefly about before we bring in our guest this morning is the Google Zeitgeist 2010. They just released it yesterday. In fact, I did a tweet about it and got a bunch of retweets. Excuse me. And it was the fastest rising, fastest falling searches in the top 10 in each category. And it's really fascinating to go through here and look at this, you know, fastest rising people. Number 6, Lady Gaga.
You know? Oh.
Number 7, was Miley Cyrus.
Is she also fastest falling by any chance?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the meat dress put me over the top.
Fastest rising map searches on Hemby Parkview. What? That must mean that people like in other countries use Google.
The heck you say?
What do you think?
Could happen.
Yeah.
Except not much in China.
If you go to the Zeitgeist webpage, they have a place where you can actually change your country, and then you can look at it over time, too, over the year.
Oh, really? Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So you can actually go and choose United States, which I did, and then it redraws all of the top searches.
Oh, okay.
And what's interesting, though, is when it does that under the food and drink category, there still is this Japanese food blog thing that's in Japanese that's number 2, which is kind of funny.
So if you go and you look at
there's a big map at the top.
Yeah, if you go to the fastest rising for the U.S., Chat Roulette number 1, iPad number 2, Justin Bieber number 3, Nicki Minaj. Yeah. Who's Nicki Minaj? Anybody?
No. Never heard of that person.
A star on Chat Roulette?
Maybe so. Friv?
She's a Trinidadian hip-hop recording artist. That's why we don't know her.
Oh, I knew that.
Okay, how could that be the biggest thing, rising thing in the United States? Okay.
Well, Twitter's in there.
Well,
yeah, Twitter, right. Gameser, Facebook, Katy Perry. Ooh, Katy Perry. She's cute. So anyway,
Down Boy.
You can. It's a very interactive site if you want to take a look at if that sort of thing just drives you wacky. So
yeah, but it's also good. It's also good to. I don't know how much anybody that's listening actually leverages Google Trends and looks at, kind of where people are at from a focus and a mindshare perspective. It's really enlightening, especially if you're looking at doing anything in the consumer space, any kind of product development. It really can help you put your finger on the pulse of things. That's why I'm going to knock off People Magazine online. And it'll be Chat Roulette, iPad, Justin Bieber all the time.
Because it's what you want it to be.
That's right. It's been my vision for a long time to do that. Anyway.
It's interesting because the World Cup kind of overshadowed a lot of the searches. Not, you know, here in the U.S., not just worldwide. So
is that a sporting event, the World Cup?
It was in June, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. There's a little fever around the world about the
in
World
South
Cup.
Africa.
Yes. 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 Well, I'm pleased to report. Thank you, Graham, for connecting us up. But a few weeks ago, I had an hour-long conversation with our guest today, Jason Baker, who is the chief technology officer at Visy Reliacloud.com, and they also own ReliaCloud. And it was just a great conversation. But after you brought this up yesterday about having Jason on the show, they really have a lot of very interesting things coming with ReliaCloud, but also they've had some new moves recently with some of the things that they've done with their data centers here. And anybody doing anything online, wouldn't it be great to use a local web host and a local network facility?
Sure.
Yeah.
And a local public cloud service. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me bring Jason on. And he is in his nerve center waiting for our call.
In this nerve center.
His copper lined bunker.
That's right. I wonder if he has a call center in his basement.
Could be. I don't know.
We'll find out.
I wonder how big his hard drive is at home.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
Jason?
Hi, guys. This is Jason.
Jason, how are you? Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham, Phil,
and Tim. How you doing,
Jason?
Tim. Brother, Fiji brother.
I'm amongst friends. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
So we were just sort of introducing you. You'll have to listen to the show to hear what we said about you. But
Jason, have you ever been tempted just to sit at the office and kind of go through what's on the servers? Have you ever been tempted
to go through what's on our servers?
Searching through all the data on the servers just to see what's in there, just out of curiosity, all that cloud data that's just waiting there. Have you ever been tempted?
Not really. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny because years and years ago, I would always get excited every year about building a new home computer, you know, putting together all the parts and components and then doing upgrades every 6 months or so on when there was a new video card or, you know, new bigger hard drive or something. And, but frankly, you know, after being in the business now for so long and having thousands of computers at my fingertips, I'm not so interested anymore. building
become,
my own.
You've become a bit jaded. I see. Yeah.
I'm not necessarily jaded. It's just that when you have so much, you know, so much computing resources at your fingertips, you just, you know, you don't really need to do that kind of stuff anymore. So, but no, I've never dug through customers' personal data. I've certainly had exposure to a lot of that data, but
No, it was more of a joke than anything. I can't imagine you would ever think about damaging the privacy of all that that data. So, but anyway,
what else has happened? But now, Jason, that you're part of a public company, that's the first thing I wanted to catch up on is you guys were acquired back in March by TDS Communications. Can you give us an update on that and what it's like being now part of another bigger firm?
Yeah, it was it was an exciting change for us. Visy, of course, started in 1994. It's a small ISP here in the Twin Cities and steadily growing. And then Mike and I acquired their business in 2005 and grew it from there. But we got to a point where, you know, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs kind of reach this stage where they've grown their business to a point where they can really no longer fund the next stage of growth themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of get to a point where you recognize that either you got to sort of stop growing and be comfortable with where you're at in your business and treat it more like a lifestyle type business, or you got to find somebody who's got much deeper pockets and can really help you sort of achieve that next stage of growth. And in our industry, you know, the data center industry and hosting industry has really changed dramatically over the past 15 years. I mean, 10 years ago, if you had a couple million dollars, you could build out a pretty nice data center facility. But today, a data center facility, at least the kind of facilities we build, we're talking $50 million, you know, to build a facility like that. And that money doesn't grow on trees. And it, so you just need, you need to have, you need to have the capital in order to pull that off. And, you know, with the recession and the economy, the way it's been, the your traditional lending community isn't handing out money to small business owners. You know, it's certainly not tens of millions of dollars. And so TDS gives us the financial strength to really, you know, take on these big data center projects, to really drive to the next stage of growth in our business. And it's been great. It's certainly been, there's been changes, obviously. You know, it's now we're a public company. There's certain things we can say and certain things we can't say. There's, you know, been changes in terms of our benefits structure and stuff, and all that. It's actually been pretty good. I mean, you guys probably recognize that the benefits offered by a Fortune 500 company are usually much better than, you know, those offered by a small business. And so that's been a really good change for our employees.
Are they really that big? Are they a Fortune 500? Give us an idea how big TDS is revenue-wise. Yeah,
they're big. And I apologize. I should know the revenue numbers off the top of my head. It's over $5 billion annual revenue. And they're like, they're like Fortune 236 or something.
Oh, wow.
Wow. I didn't realize that. So are you spending a lot of time in Madison where they're based, or?
Personally, I've been down there, I think once or twice. Our CEO, Mike Sawada, is down there, it seems like every month. And then their team has been traveling up to Eden Prairie quite a bit, you know, because we're building out the facility there, and I think they get excited and checking out the progress of our build out. So yeah, there's been quite a bit of interaction, and we're talking to them most every day.
Huh? Yeah. Now, how many states do they do business in? Is it quite a big area of the country, or is it mainly just the upper Midwest, or?
You know, mainly it's central U.S. You know, they own telco properties, you know, throughout Wisconsin and Minnesota, all the way down through, you know, like Colorado, Texas, I believe. I mean, they've really got properties. And then they've got some stuff out in the Northeast as well.
Really?
They've got some properties out in on the West Coast as well. So they've it's pretty interesting, but it's mostly centralized in sort of the central region of the United States.
But it does give Visy a potentially a bigger footprint for sure.
It does. You know, our goal ultimately with TDS's backing is to become the Midwest's regional superpower when it comes to data center and managed hosting services. I mean, if you look at most other regions of the country, you could point to specific companies that really dominate that particular region, whether it's the upper Northeast or the Southeast, or if it's on, you know, the West Coast or mountain region. There's just specific companies that dominate those different regions. And you look in the upper Midwest, you can't really name a company. There is no dominant player.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of companies that have a point of presence in Chicago, but other than, and maybe in Minneapolis, but other than that, I mean, they just have nothing else. And so we think there's an opportunity. There's a vacuum that we can fill, you know, becoming that regional dominant player here in the upper Midwest.
That's beautiful.
Is it also atypical for, you know, the like you just said, for the Midwest, that you guys became a tier 3 data center in Eden Prairie?
Yeah, it's very atypical. I mean, in fact, we were the first service provider to actually build a tier 3 design certified facility in the state of Minnesota, which it kind of shocks me. And talking with the folks at the Uptime Institute yesterday, the Uptime Institute, by the way, is the organization that created the tiering standard for data centers. And they're the only organization in the world that can actually do the auditing and certification of these data centers to determine what tier they're at. Mm. But what surprised me when in conversation with them yesterday was that they noted that there's less than 50 tier three data centers in the world. Mm. 50 in the entire, wow, in the entire world. And we're actually now one of those. And we're not the only one in the state of Minnesota, as it turns out. We're the only service provider that has one in the state of Minnesota. But,
right,
you know, there's a couple other notable facilities. The guys at Target have built out, I think, two tier three data center facilities. I know that United Health Group's got a tier three data center facility. So actually, there's sort of a cluster of them. In the Twin Cities, which is kind of unusual.
But they're private and not available to anyone else, yeah, which makes them totally different from yours.
Yeah, exactly. If you're a business and you want to put your equipment into a tier three data center, I mean, you're not going to be able to move that into Target. You can now lease a slice of a tier three data center at Visy's Eden Prairie facility.
Wow. And tell us about the big new customer. Can you announce this new customer that you landed?
Yeah, we can because it's public record. And, okay, you know, one of our first anchor tenants is going to be Hennepin County, which we're really excited about.
Fabulous. So, yeah. Haven't heard of them. Sorry, don't know them.
Yeah.
the guys with all the money.
So, yeah, if you guys, assuming you guys live in Hennepin County, then your data will be you know, securely stored in our data center facility.
I feel much better.
Well, we're trying to get all the data from Dakota County off the legal pad paper. And
yeah. Well, you should feel really good. I mean, they're moving out of their old legacy facility downtown, and you know, the new Eden Prairie data center facility will be a substantial upgrade in terms of, you know, reliability and capabilities for them. So I know that they're excited because, you know, of the quality of facility that they're able to move into.
And so now I understand that you did a partnership with Lifetime Fitness so that you can tap into all the energy from the bikes and treadmills to help power the data center. Not true. That's just a rumor.
Brilliant.
You know, on treadmills.
Speaking about energy, I got kind of a interesting story in that, you know, people sometimes ask us, you know, about what our green initiatives are. And you kind of shy away from those kind of types of questions as a data center operator, because data center providers, I mean, we're huge consumers of power. Right. And we actually need energy in order to grow our businesses. But at the same time, you know, I'm not in the business of trying to save energy. I'm in the business of trying to use energy as efficiently as I possibly can and not waste it whenever possible. But I've had people, you know, come up to us and talk to us about, you know, green initiatives. And one of them was using solar power to power our data center facility, you know, or to provide some of the power for a data center facility. So we had looked at actually, you know, plastering the entire roof of the data center with solar panel arrays. There's an adjacent field next to the data center facility. We thought, well, you could build out a big solar panel farm in that field, but, you know, just doing sort of rudimentary calculations, we found that the power generated by those solar panels would only contribute about 3% of the power usage in the entire facility. I mean, so it was just a trivial amount. And that's, of course, just during the daytime.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just absolutely trivial amount. These data centers require lots and lots of energy. And again, we try to use energy as efficiently as we possibly can.
Don't you use diesel generators or natural gas generators as your backup?
We do use huge diesel generators. In fact, the generators at our new facility are these 3-megawatt Caterpillar generators. They're just massive. They're like the biggest Caterpillar generators that are manufactured. And the Caterpillar guys were like taking videos, and they're doing like a white paper on our installation, just these things are super cool because they're so massive. What's interesting though, is that we take sort of the opposite perspective on these generators. We don't look at them as backup power. They're actually primary power. It's the perspective that the Uptime Institute has as well as relates to data centers. So from a data center provider's perspective, our generators, that's our primary power for the facility. Now, of course, we have utility power, but the purpose of utility power isn't for backup purposes. It's for economic reasons. Utility power just happens to be a cheaper source of power than running diesel generators. So, in fact, from the Uptime Institute's perspective in Tier 3 data center classification, you can build a Tier 3 data center without connecting it to a utility. A Tier 3 data center, though, has to have redundant generated power. A Tier 3 facility has to be able to generate its own power indefinitely. And so the generators are really your primary source of power. It just so happens that we use utility power most of the time just because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Well, so to be Tier 4, you have to be able to power your cooling equipment, right? As well as everything else?
Well, Tier 4, yeah, I mean, first of all, there's I found out yesterday as well, there's only like 6 Tier 4 facilities in the world. Hmm. I mean, and most of these are surrounded by guys holding guns. so I mean, they're really designed for military installations or for financial institutions. I mean, most people can't afford to build a Tier 4 facility, nor would they want to pay the price to be in one.
Yeah.
You know, just as a frame of reference, a Tier 3 facility is 2 to 3 times more expensive to build than a Tier 2 facility. I mean, so it's substantially more expensive. Tier 3 gives you what's called concurrent maintenance, meaning that I can essentially remove any kind of major component within the data center facility. I can take it offline for maintenance purposes or to completely replace it without impacting customer services whatsoever. Hmm. So that's not true of a Tier 2 or Tier 1 data center facility. If I'm in those kind of facilities and that data center provider needs to do maintenance work or do an upgrade on a component, then chances are I'm going down.
Yeah.
You know, for a short maintenance window during that process. Tier 3, there's no maintenance windows because everything is concurrently maintainable. Tier 4 is what's called fault tolerant. In the Tier 4 world, what that means is that the data center can withstand a failure of any component at any time, and that the switchover process from that failed component is completely automated.
So how do you provide geographic diversity for customers if that's one of their requirements? Do you partner with other companies or?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what one's definition of geographic diversity is. And there's sort of a wide variety of different requirements there. Our two facilities are more than 10 miles apart, which meets the needs of the vast majority of people that are looking for DR and business continuity. And we've got a fiber connecting to the two facilities, you know, 10 gigabit type connectivity. So people can actually do things like synchronous data replication between the two facilities because they're close enough to accommodate that type of requirement. In the future, I would expect us to have additional facilities that are outside the Twin Cities region, probably outside of the state. And so for businesses that you know want the facilities to be hundreds of miles apart, I would expect us to accommodate those kinds of needs here in the near future.
So let's talk briefly, because we're almost out of time. I want to touch on ReliaCloud and some of the things that are coming, but also, is ReliaCloud housed in your Tier 3 data center, or is it how do you run that particular piece of business?
Yeah, Relia Cloud today is actually, there's kind of two pieces to it. One is cloud servers. Mm-hmm. The cloud servers portion is actually housed in St. Paul. And then the second piece is cloud storage. Cloud storage is, interestingly enough, housed in our new facility in Eden Prairie. Mm-hmm. So it was more of a timing issue than anything. I mean, the Eden Prairie facility is just simply newer. And we started out building out the Relia Cloud services in St. Paul. But then this next year, we'll build out services in both facilities and then offer customers the ability to provision cloud resources in either one of those facilities. And then in additional facilities in the future, we're currently now working on our second generation cloud platform, which I would expect us to launch at the end of the first or beginning of the second quarter in 2011. And our second generation platform is going to be, we're sort of going up the food chain, so to speak, and focusing more on managed cloud services and targeting, you know, larger enterprises than we've targeted in the past. Mm-hmm. What we've found is that there's many companies out there that want to leverage cloud infrastructure, but they don't have the in-house expertise to really manage that. And so we want to provide not only the infrastructure, but the management they need on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us an idea of the customer uptake you've had with Relia Cloud so far, Jason? You know, as far as the sizes of firms and geographic locations of the firms that are using the service, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I would say that most of the firms are SMB. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we've got any large enterprises using our platform today. They're companies here in Minnesota. There's really companies across the U.S. I don't think we have anybody outside of the U.S. currently using the platform. That was kind of funny that when we initially launched the platform, we had quite a few companies outside the U.S. that were leveraging it. Mm. You know, but not for legitimate business purposes. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
We quickly found that we were getting all these orders from Vietnam for some reason, and we did some digging into you know, their systems and trying to understand what they were doing. And of course, they were stealing credit cards, and then they were buying stuff from eBay, and so they were using Relia Cloud as a launching pad for, you know, their phishing attacks. So we had to put some measures in place to mitigate that.
Have you had any substantial number of startups that are using your service? I mean, I'm curious how they might have compared the service to Amazon or Rackspace.
Not really. You know, here's sort of the bottom line when it comes to the cloud. I mean, there's an 800-pound gorilla in the marketplace that's called Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. And they own about 50% of the infrastructure as a service market share out
wow.
there right now.
Yeah.
And then you've got sort of everybody else who's you know, trying to build some market share out there. I'm talking, you know, the Rackspaces of the world, you know, the Relia Clouds of the world, Terramark,
Go Grid,
and others. Everybody else is fighting for the scraps, mm-hmm. so to speak. I mean, Amazon is absolutely dominant, and
Rackspace is kind of a distant second, even.
They are a distant second, yeah. And in fact, Rackspace is sort of changing its tune now. And you listen to the Rackspace guys; they're much more interested now in managed services in the cloud, because they're having a hard time fighting against the Amazon juggernaut. Amazon's done an awesome job at building out a set of tools and an API and capabilities that really appeal to the developer community and to the real techie community. I don't see our platform ever going that direction. I don't know that we'll ever build a platform that's going to appeal to that particular crowd. I mean, if you are a a startup company, you're doing this sort of cloud scale application development, you want to build your application on a platform that truly scales globally, right? You want to go to your investors and say that, you know, your platform is being powered by an Amazon. You know, and your investors aren't going to blink when they hear that, because they're going to feel comfortable, because they know that other companies like the Zyngas of the world have been able to really scale their businesses globally on that platform. Mm-hmm. And so it just, we're not going to be able to compete against that. Now, we do see an opportunity for companies that want to leverage cloud services, not only at Visy, but potentially at Amazon, companies that don't have the expertise to use those cloud resources, mm-hmm. and may need our management help.
Yeah, your front end kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So are you looking to add stuff like content delivery networks from other companies like Limelight or somebody to your package?
We've certainly talked about it. You know, that's there's sort of a cloud trifecta when it comes to technologies, you know, the cloud servers, cloud storage, and then the content delivery piece. And the content delivery piece is one that we're missing right now, and certainly something that we're targeting for addition in the future. And I don't expect we would build that out ourselves. We would probably most likely partner with a Limelight type company.
Hey, one thing I wanted to jump in on here is you're expanding, which is exciting. You're adding people, and talk a little bit about what kinds of people you're adding. And, you know, you've added a bunch in the last quarter here, and you're looking to add more. What kinds of positions?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to say that we're hiring. So, which is always a good thing in this economic climate. You know, in 2009, 2008, during the recession, we didn't have to lay anybody off. Mm. We certainly had to cut back, you know, on things like our soda budget and that kind of thing. But we kept our head count. And now, because of the expansion that we're undergoing, we need to, you know, just as we're building up data center facilities, we need to add head count, and we need to add expertise to our organization. So we're hiring in the sales team, we're hiring developers.
What kind?
Our developers are, you know, web application developers. These are guys that generally know like PHP, MySQL, Microsoft SQL, you know, Apache, IIS, mm-hmm. XML. You know, so web services kind of development, that's those are usually kind of the tools, technologies that we play in. And much of the work that we're doing from a development perspective is really integrating different platforms together. And so people who are really good at integration and, you know, and sort of taking these business processes and turning them into code, those are the types of folks that we're looking for. We always are hiring people on the engineering and sysadmin side. We're always looking for good people in that area as well.
Sure.
So, yeah, we've got at least a handful of openings right now, and mm-hmm. it's every week I show up at the office, there seems to be more people there. So, the other thing was, I know we're looking for product managers as well. Mm. I believe we've got two openings for product managers.
There you go. And these jobs are all posted on Visy.com, right?
They are posted on Visy.com.
Sure. Cool.
Great. Hey,
well,
Jason.
It's been great to get the update.
Yeah. I really appreciate you carving out time this morning to talk to us and be on the show.
Absolutely, guys. And open invitation to you guys, and also to any of the listeners for the podcast, to do a private tour of our new Eden Prairie data center facility. So
great.
You know, just contact me, let me know when you're in the area, and I'll be happy to walk you through the facility. And you guys, especially you guys, I know are in Eden Prairie all the time. Let me know, stop by the facility. I got to show it to you because it's very, very cool.
That's great. I've seen it, but not for close to a year. So I went, I'll have to get over there again.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it for a year,
there's a lot of changes. I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. You haven't seen, you just haven't seen it. It's
yeah.
I was there when it was just a big empty room.
Yeah.
So
totally different. It's pretty amazing what tens of millions of dollars does for you. So
yeah.
Well, congratulations on everything, Jason, and our best wishes to your team.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to join you this morning.
Alrighty. Take care.
You too.
See you later.
Bye now. You know, he's such a great guy.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, I remember going over and interviewing him probably 2 years ago, and, you know, he easily could have been pretentious and I don't really have time for this and all of that. But I mean, he is just totally open to listening to everybody with respect to business ideas or what the market requires. And he's open to different channels of discussion and yeah, just a great guy.
Yeah. He's a real easygoing guy. And of course his partner, Mike, the CEO, is just a real hard driver and a, you know, real high energy guy, great guy, but they balance each other well. And, you know, and I will say they're very active in the community too. Jason, I know is active in lots of things, including in my fraternity. And, it's always been a leader there. And so, they're a great team and I'm glad to hear they're doing so well. They're definitely going to that next step of growth, being part of this TDS outfit.
Yep. Well, so we have a little bit of time left and I'd like to, segue into something that you, brought to our attention, Phil. It was on all over Twitter last night. Especially Lisa Grimm, Lulu Grimm, was talking about it. So she must have been tapped as one of the social media titans. So what do you know about that initiative? And
you know, I don't know a whole lot myself, other than it's put together by. This is the second time Judy's been on the podcast, been mentioned on the podcast. She also posted the white iPhone thing last week. But Judy, is it Grunstrom from Judy Creative Communications? She puts this Twin Cities Top 10 Titans in social media.
Okay.
And she started this last year, so this was the second year. And, you know, it's basically a nomination process. She calls for people to nominate people that are active in social media that, you know, are, I guess, titans in the profession. So
would these be social media experts by chance?
You know, I don't think she comes out and says experts, but boy, no, I hate she that doesn't. Term, don't you? Man, I hate
no,
that
she
term.
Doesn't. Well, you're thinking about
titans. We got
it's titans. Where it's a titan, but it's the Twin Cities top 10. Our buddy Greg Swan is one of them. Amy Nelson at the Pioneer Press is one. Who else?
Oh, there's a, I'll put a link in the show notes so people can look at all the, but, I mean, you know, Eric Hansen and,
you know, Eric does his own little, award too. I think he gives out badges for people too. So,
you know, we ought to do that.
I don't believe there's any cash award that comes with this.
We ought to do that. We ought to do the, you know, the Minivate Mavens or.
Yeah, this is a growth business. Let's get into this.
Yeah, right. They feel warm and snuggly, right? It's interesting. You look at it and you think, okay, well, yeah, I suppose we all need to pat ourselves on the back once in a while. So
I want to be part of it when they do the top 1,000 Titans. You know. That would be, hey, we could go.
I detect sarcasm, Mr. Thickens. Well, I mean, it's the same sort of thing that plagues the Oscars, the Emmys, the Tonys is, you know, it's a little bit of a self-aggrandizing sort of a thing. That's the sort of thing that drives social media, isn't it? We're all really kind of a bunch of narcissists.
It's a bunch of ego crap, you know, to a large extent, but we all love it.
Yep. Yeah. So I was gonna talk to you about your ego, Graham.
Yeah, I know you were. You brought that up before.
Come on,
it's your monthly check.
That's right. Yeah. I did notice that Eric Hansen and Lisa Grimm are both Titans, by the way. So,
well, that's better than being a Titanic, is all I can say.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Well, with
that, social we'll media come. Titanics, let's do that one.
Oh, stop.
Oh, man. All right. Well, the other thing that we've had some casual discussion about, when you did that post, Graham, about Gazzaro Protect, you know, the price adjustments and how they tapped into the Best Buy API. Why don't you just briefly recap that and what's going on?
Yeah, well, you know, I had met these people a year and a half ago at Demo. They launched the company. It's a Canadian company out of Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And they actually have a new CEO who I'm really impressed with. And, you know, I got this pitch from them. And, I get lots of pitches every day. But I looked at this one and I thought, wait a minute. This sounds like it's Best Buy specific. I'm going to drill into this a little more. And these guys are heavy technology-based company that's been at this for several years, using artificial intelligence, and they have some really smart guys, and they started using the BBY Open, formerly Remix, Open API to tap into the Best Buy catalog, and they came up with a really interesting app that enables you to sort of protect your purchases at Best Buy. Instead of waiting for the price to go down, screw it, just go buy it, register it with Gazzaro Protect. And you'll get notified when the price is dropped and you go collect your money at the counter in Best Buy, you know, which we've all probably done before.
Do they do price matching as well as if something goes on sale?
What do you mean price matching?
Like if Micro Center has it the next week on sale.
No, that's not their intent.
You got to look at Gazzaro.com. They do a lot of other things. This is not their first product. They have a retail pricing database that's beyond anything I'm aware of. And so anyway, they do this app and Best Buy won't comment on it. My first thought was, I'll just call up Steve Bent or Gary Kohling or somebody over there and do a little interview on this app, you know, because they've obviously been working with these guys, you know, including, you know, some personal interface. I get a curt no comment back from the PR department. So I just find it kind of interesting. I don't think they really know what to make of this, or they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to publicize it, obviously, because the initial impact is it pulls money right out of their cash register. But as Gazzaro points out, hey, it's a long-term win for them. It creates a better relationship with your customer. Think about it. It brings people back to the store. Oh, I'm going to go get that $10 back. They drop the price, you know. While they're in the store, what do? They likely buy other stuff, that $10 and probably more. So, you know, I'm really convinced that it's a great thing, and certainly Gazzaro is, but it's like I got absolutely zero reaction from anybody at Best Buy. You know?
Well, you know, they probably want to see if their results change, because remember, I mean, it's you can predict, you know, how many people are going to buy something on ad. So you run a Sunday circular and you make your projections, and you've got some history to go through, and then you can see whether or not it's a good thing or not. And it's the same thing with rebates. You know, Best Buy was one of the first major retailers to kill. Brad Anderson, remember, he came out and killed rebates.
I could have kissed
the guy's feet, because I hate rebates. Oh. But only something like 38% of people file for rebates. And out of that, you know, another 10% of that 38% to end up doing it correctly or something. And so they've got to go back and forth, and most people just forget it, or they lose the receipt and they don't bother. So in theory, rebates are a good thing, because you end up bolstering your gross margin. Or warranties, you know, extra warranties are basically nothing but profit because of that same sort of thing. But I don't think they have any history, and that's why they're not saying anything. They don't know whether this is going to impact it or not.
They're waiting to see. And by the way, this isn't just an iPhone app. You can do it on the web. You know, and the cool thing with the iPhone app is you can get a barcode scanner with it that enables you to do it real quickly in store or right off the package of the product. You can also do it by email. I mean, it's a really pretty sophisticated platform. And of course, they're going to do it for other retailers as well. But and I, in chatting with the CEO of Gazzaro, he said, yes, there are other retailers that have open APIs like this. Best Buy, you know, isn't the only one. So they've got plans to expand it further. But it'll be something fun to watch.
So let me ask you guys, all three of you, you know, start with you, Phil. Apps like Red Laser, which allow you to go in and scan a barcode and see if there's somebody around you geographically that has that product less expensively, and if not, what the online retailers are offering it for, puts a lot of power in our hands. And yet, in the old days, meaning even 3 or 4 years ago, you couldn't... The olden times, you couldn't walk into a Target, a Walmart, a Best Buy, any major retailer and take photographs because right. They didn't want to have their planograms photographed by competitors and knocked off to know exactly what they're merchandising and how much the stuff is and so on and so forth. And yet all of us are not only walking around with phones that, not all of us, but a lot of us walking around with phones with cameras in it, but now we've got things that can scan to see, I want to touch, feel, play with this physical product, but now I can buy it for 20% less online. How do you think that's going to impact what this Gazzaro Protect is doing and apps like Red Laser?
Well, I think the retailers are going to have to relax their policies. By the way, did you see that Best Buy does not do price matching on stuff you show them on your mobile phone? They had to cite a correction to a Wall Street Journal story that said they did. They do not.
Okay.
So if you go in there and say, hey, wait a minute, I can buy this product for $20 less. Here's the proof. Look right here on my mobile phone. They're going to tell you, sorry, we don't match those.
Well, they just don't want to compete with Amazon and Overstock.com and places like that that don't have the brick and mortar build out.
Right. That's
right. So if it's say Micro Center or Target or somebody like that, and you have a physical printed ad, of course they'll do the price match.
Yeah, I suppose they, and I know from a personal experience of buying a Virgin Mobile prepaid MiFi card in there. And I had printed out from the Virgin Mobile site what they were selling it for. And it was $20 less than what Best Buy was. And I happened to take the sheet in because I wanted to make sure I got the right product. And I said, well, I imagine you'll match this, right? No, we won't do that. And so, okay. So I paid $20 more, figured out I can always go back and get the $20 back later. Gazzaro Protect is just another way for you to do that. Yeah. But it does include, well, it's another way for you, because Best Buy told me at the time, oh, we'll be dropping our price to that. And so I said to the guy, well, then why don't you give it to me now? Well, you have to wait for the system to catch up. You know, it's like, guess what? The systems are going to be catching up in real time here.
Yeah. Well, with Amazon Prime, though, it's, you don't have to wait a long time. It's, you know, 2 days and you have whatever. So I don't find that to be a real problem. And if it's a significant savings, I'm going to do that every time. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, one of the things I do as part of my work is I follow retail. And that's one of the big issues is, you know, how do these retailers take advantage of the trends like social and mobile, which are now, you know, huge. And how do they respond to an empowered consumer who's not only, you know, doing Red Laser and Shop Savvy and all these apps that give you these comparisons immediately, right, while they're at the point of sale. How do you compete with that?
Right.
And I think to their credit, Best Buy are trying a bunch of different things like their QR codes, which I think is a brilliant strategy.
Bingo. Yep. I was just going
to try to
that.
Provide a better experience while the customer is still in the store. And they're doing stuff with other apps like Shopkick, that another good strategy to try to counteract that. Give people more of a reason to be in the store, give people rewards when they're there in the form of digital coupons and so forth.
Yep. It's extremely absolutely. Hard to compete with the online, I'll tell you that. I don't want to go into the stores. I want to do it online. I hate going into the stores. I don't know about you guys. Every time I go in there, I have to stand around with my thumb in my ear waiting for somebody to become available to help me.
Are you serious?
I don't know if it's just the Eden Prairie store or what, but
it's exactly the opposite
in there.
It's exactly the opposite for me.
Why am I here? Yeah. I'm wasting time. You know, it's like, I got a question. It's like, you know, everybody's being helped. And it's like, you know what? I could have done this online and waited a day or paid FedEx or something overnight or used Amazon Prime and gotten it in 2 days. The only time I go in there is when I need something, like right now. You know, I want to go in there and get the hell out of there as fast as I can.
Well, maybe it's when you go in, because I've actually had the opposite experience where I've walked through the store and every single person has said, can I help you? Can I help you? And then as I walk through the store, the same people will come up to me and ask me, oh, can I help you? I said, no, you already asked me that. And I'm just looking.
You're a lucky man from every, you know, the guy in the front. Oh yeah, he's real, real helpful. But then when I walk the half mile to where I got to go to find the product, there's nobody there that can help me. They're all busy, or they're ignoring me, or they're rushing off to do something else. I'm telling you, I'll state it right now. I'm not impressed with their in-store service, and I just won't do it. I will not go in there unless I absolutely have no other choice.
They have a mugshot of people to stay away from on their mobile devices, and your picture's there. So
must be.
So I've never been asked to not take pictures. So I do that all the time. Of things that I may or may not buy, and I'm using this app is called what is it? It's new one. SpringPad. Have you tried SpringPad?
No.
It's actually an interesting app. It's one that it's got a barcode thing. And you can just take pictures or scan barcodes, and it's like a stuff organizer, and it of course meshes with the web and all that. So it's interesting. I believe they have an iPad version as well as Android, and they have a web app too. So it's just a good way of you see something at retail, you go, oh, I might want to check that out later. You know, you just take a quick snap of the barcode or of the the item itself, and it just stores it up for you.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it's got to be hard for those clerks to accost people and tell them to stop taking pictures. So you raise a good point. That's not an easy thing to do, you know, I suppose.
Yeah, especially now. So.
Yeah.
So SMB is coming up on events management on December 17th.
Yep.
So that ought to
That's
be
the topic.
That ought to be a good one. It's
Who's
be
on the panel? Like Jen Kane and people like that?
Yeah, Jen Kane and Michael Roventeen and I don't have her from the state fair, right? From the Minnesota State Fair?
That's right, yes.
I can't remember her name, I'm sorry.
Yep.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. And they're holding this one at
Coco MSP, isn't it?
No, I thought it was, what they're doing something at the depot, aren't they, Phil?
Yeah, the depot is... What is the depot?
I thought they were
depot
doing
is the Coco
the
MSP
Union Depot.
Is the holiday party.
Yeah.
Holiday party. Is MEMA? No, MEMA's at the 5 Events Center. And then the depot is where the
events panel.
Got it.
Yeah.
The events panel is, yes.
Yes. Okay. All right.
And they're about a week apart. The events panel first and then the holiday party, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. And then, Graham, you were invited to some.
I'm going to the Split Rock Partners private holiday reception on Monday night. So,
well, la-dee-da.
If anybody out there has any questions about Split Rock, let me know.
La-dee-da. You were going to say it, weren't you? La-dee-da.
It's going to be a lot of folks there from the investment community, and
right.
I suppose the lawyers and all the folks that tend to work with the new startups and. Right over there in Eden Prairie, across the pond from where Compellent sits.
Yeah, that's a building that Split Rock's in is gorgeous. Yeah. Hey, by the way, while you're there, why don't you just, if nothing else, get a read on the optimism for 2011? Is it?
Yeah.
Are all these people optimistic, or are they cautiously optimistic, or are they pessimistic?
Yeah, I definitely will do that. Yep. And also try to get a read on early stage investing, which is what we like to think that the folks at Split Rock are doing more of.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay. it'll be a fun event.
So Phil, you mentioned the MEMA event, And what was this Chris Mahanu Kwanzaa guy?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's just what they were calling it. Yeah, the
holiday. It's a holiday party.
Chris, so. How do you say it? Chris Mahanu.
I have no idea. I saw that
holiday
too.
Holiday party. That's pretty funny. God. That's the same night, right? Same day, December 17th.
As the what?
As SMB. So one's in the morning and one's in the evening. I assume.
Hey, isn't it? I think it's a different day, isn't it?
Well.
I put it in the show notes and I don't know. Listen to me.
Okay, everyone go to the show notes. Don't listen to us.
Because clearly we don't know what we're talking about.
That's right. That's right. We always bring things up. It's like, oh, who checked? Who went to the site and looked? Oh,
anybody frisk this for problems? No.
That's right. That's right. Okay. All right.
But okay. So, and we should probably say before we sign off that, 2 weeks, we'll be doing the end of year recap of what our predictions were from last year. And
that's
then
right.
What they are for next year, right?
That's right. And if you can't find last year's prediction show, it's because it's been temporarily moved because I'll predict everything that already happened. I'll bring that up.
We're going to go back and redo that one.
That's right.
We'll look that's brilliant.
Right. We'll that's right.
Brilliant.
Here will be Graham saying, you know, on December 7th, Dell made a bid for Compellent, and I think it'll be $876 million. Anyway.
Except I
brilliant.
Did.
We are brilliant.
That's right.
Just didn't say the amount.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen.
All right.
Good
Have
show.
Have a great day, y'all.
Thanks.
You too.
Talk to
See
you
next
soon.
Week.
And get ready for the snow tomorrow.
Oh, don't even go there.
Oh, listen to you.
It's the weekend. Yeah.
All right.
Good move to San Clemente if you don't like the snow, Graham.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm thinking of going next week, actually.
All right. Take care, gentlemen.
All right. See you next.
Bye-bye.
Bye.